Hello, this is Ilana Goldstein-Sachs of Web Yeshiva with this week's Rashi podcast for Parashat Matot Mas'e. Visit www.webyeshiva.org for more information on our fully interactive online yeshiva. The beginning of the second of this of the two parashiot of this week, Parashat Mas'e, is a list of the places, or I should say a recap of the places that Bnei Israel traveled while they were wandering around for 40 years in the desert. If I had to be honest, this is probably a perfect example of one of those things in the Torah that is often ignored. Meaning, not entirely, but generally, when we're sitting in shul and we are listening to this list, we kind of like, you know, half tune out, like we often do with the lists in the Torah of various things. Because, well, first of all, it's a list, right? It's just a place after place of where Bnei Israel traveled. And also, if that wasn't seemingly boring enough, it's also a recap, meaning these are things that we've already heard about, and the Torah is just telling us about it again for some reason. What we'll see today, very briefly, is that in some ways that is unfair, right? Sometimes some of the most interesting little tidbits, hidden tidbits, because perhaps we don't look at these lists carefully enough, are found in these lists. Just Dafka, because it's a recap, right, there's what to compare with the first time that we're told about it in the Torah, and because it's a recap, also we have to contemplate the question of why it's in the Torah bichlal. Like why is the Torah telling us this if we already heard it the first time? So while this can be seen, you know, much more fully if one actually sits down and reads through the list and compares it from beginning to end to the other parts of the Torah, which talk about the same events. And if you do it with Rashi, even better. And if you do it with more Mifreshim, Matovu Manaim. But we'll see a little touch of this by looking at one Rashi today, right? Where on the one hand, we're going to see something of those little tidbits that I mentioned, right? That there's always something interesting to be found by comparing a list such as the one that the beginning of Parashat Maaseh to the first time the stories are told, and also something of Rashi's trying to understand why we are reading this list to begin with. Why is this list included in the Torah bichlal at all? Parashat Mas'eh begins, Ele Mas'eh v'nei Yisrael asher yatzu me'eretz Mitzrayim v'tzivotam v'yad Moshe v'Aharon. But these are the places that Bnei Yisrael traveled to after they left Mitzrayim, with Moshe and Aharon, by the hand of Moshe and Aharon. Rashi gets right to the heart of the question. Ele masae, lama nichtavu masaot halelu? Right? Why are these masaot written? Why are we given this list? Right? And so Rashi answers, lehodia chasadav shel makom. Right? The purpose of this list, Rashi says, or I should say more accurately, Rashi quotes, because Rashi is taking this from the Midrash Agadah on Bamidbar. Lehodiyah chasadav shel makom. The list is here in order to tell us of the kindness or the kindnesses of Hashem. She'af al pi shegazar alehem l'taltelam ulehani'am Bamidbar. Even though Hashem decreed that Bnei Israel were to be wandering around in the desert, that he would be taking them around and causing them to wander in the desert, right? This, of course, is as a result of the Chet HaMeraglim, right? They were no longer going to go straight into Eretz Israel as originally planned. Rather, they were now going to have to wander around for an additional 38 years in the desert. Lo tomar shehayu na'im mimutultalim mimasa lemasa kol 40 shana v'lo hita lehem menucha. Right, Rashi says that despite the fact that the punishment that Bnei Israel were supposed to have, was that they were going to be wandering around, right? What's the term that Rashi uses? L'taltelam u'lehani'am. Right, that they were going to have to be wandering, constantly moving for 40 years in the desert, or an additional 38 years in the desert. But that, according to Rashi, was meant to be their punishment, not simply that they had to remain in the desert, but they had to be wandering around, right? Which is, as a side point, is interesting, because it's not the first time that we hear about somebody wandering as a result of of a chait that they did, right? A sin that they did, and the punishment is that they have to wander, right? The most obvious example, of course, is when Cain kills Hevel, right? He's told Navanati Yavaretz. He's not simply sent away. He has to be a constant wanderer, right? This is a theme that you could see in other places as well, right? But then we see that element here in what Rashi is saying, that they not only had to be in the desert and not in Eretz Yisrael, but they had to be wandering around the desert. Despite that, Rashi says, Lo tomar shehayu na'im mitultalim mimasa lemasa kol 40 shana, right? You can't say that they were actually doing that for 40 years, because shehare en kan ela 40 u'shtay masot. Sach hakol, all together, in this entire list, there are 42 recordings of their having traveled, right, or 42 stops. Right, and now Rashi does a calculation. Say mehem yudalid, right, arba'at rei shekulam hayu b'shana rishona kodem gzeira. So first of all, you have to immediately eliminate 14 of them. Right, of the 42, you have to immediately eliminate 14 of them, right, because those were in the first year of their being in the desert, which was before the punishment, right? So the first 14 stops had nothing to do with their punishment, right? That was just where they had to go in order to get from Egypt to Har Sinai, right? Or from Egypt to sorry, more accurately, from Egypt to Midbar Paran, to Kadesh, where the Meraglim were sent. Mishenasu miram says ad shebo bao the ritma, right? So Rashi, right? Explains what I just explained, right? From the time they left Ramses, right, the first stop, the springboard from which they left Mitzrayim, until they got to Ritma. Ritma, as we will see momentarily, is the place from which, according to the list here, from which Bnei Israel sent the Meraglim. So from Ramses to Ritma, there were 14 stops, which don't count because those were before the Gzeira, so they were not part of the punishment. Right, this is how, right, this is where Rashi goes into explaining why Ritma here is the place where they sent the Meraglim, whereas elsewhere it's called somewhere else. We'll get into this point later, right? But take out your pencil and paper for a moment, or your calculator, or for those of you who are good at math, you can do it in your head, right? We originally had 42 masa'ot. We are now subtracting 14 of them because those were before the gzera of Chet HaMeraglim. So we are left with 28 masa'ot. Now we're going to skip a line or two because we're going to get back to that later. But we'll continue on in the Rashi. Right, so then we also have to eliminate another eight, right? Because those eight were in the 40th year, right? Which were already considered after the time of the Gezerah, right? Not included in, kind of like the last things that happened before the Eretz Yisrael, which were also not considered part of the punishment of wandering in the desert, but rather they were just kind of like the things that had to be done before entering Eretz Yisrael. So for those of you who've been keeping track, nimtza, shekol shmona v'shloshim shana lo nasu ela esrim masaot. Right, so that during the 38 years that Bnei Israel were wandering as a punishment in the desert, they only had to travel 20 times. Now that may seem, for anybody who has ever had to move from one place to another, and knows that the nightmare that packing can be, that seems like a lot, right, to move 20 times in 38 years. But considering this was meant to be a punishment, right, this was, at least according to Harashi's understanding, it, that part of the punishment was that they were supposed to be constantly moving. And the fact that they probably didn't have all that much to pack up, this leads Rashi to conclude that really they got off pretty easy, right? Moving 20 times in 38 years, considering what they could have, might have had to go through, wasn't so bad, right? If you look at the Gur Aryeh, which I'm not going to take time to look at inside right now, he explains how these places, right, those remaining 20 masa'ot, which were part of the punishment of the aftermath of Chet HaMeraglim, he shows that these places are very close to each other. So it's not as if they had to travel major major amounts in order to get from one place to the other. We're talking about relatively minor moves, right? Again, and it's Royer's attempt to understand what Rashi is saying, that Bnei Israel had it pretty good, all things considered, right? Zeh mi yisodo shel Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan. Right? So here Rashi is giving his quote. He said this is the explanation of Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan, right? And as I mentioned, it's written in the Midrash Agadah on Sefer Bamidbar. Now I just want to stop for a moment before we get back to the issue of that, which is Rashi's main goal here, which is to understand why this list is here, Bichlal. Why are we hearing a recap of these places? Why does the Torah need to tell us this? Right. Well, we'll get back to that subject in a moment. But I'd like to just take a small aside for a moment to go back to those lines which I skipped, right? To see what Rashi is doing here, right? Because after all, Rashi is basing his interpretation here on a certain understanding of a particular place in the list of Masa'ot, right? So I'd like just to take a look at that for a moment to see what Rashi is doing, right? To understand this little tidbit, as I mentioned earlier, in Rashi's commentary, right? So again, Rashi in this first part of his commentary, which we already looked at, is explaining that there were only 20 masa'ot as a result of the punishment of Chet HaMeraglim, right? And he says, right, Tzeh mihem yudal shekulam hayu b'shana rishona kodem gzera mishenasu miramseis ad shebao l'ritma shemisha mishlechu HaMeraglim, right? So his calculations and all of the math that he does is based on the fact that from Ramses until Ritma, you have to eliminate 14. And he says that Ritma is the place that is the place from which the Meraglim were sent, right? Now, and Rashi's math in this commentary is based on this idea that Ritma is the place from where the Meraglim were sent. Now, the casual reader of this might say, okay, or the casual reader might just take it at face value and not think about it much at all. The semi-casual reader might say, okay, but where does Rashi get this from? We've never heard of Ritma. The careful reader will say, that's not the place that I've heard of as the name of the place where the Meraglim were sent from. How does Rashi know that Ritma is actually the place that the Meraglim were sent from? Right? And so that's the part that I skipped over that. And I just want to go back to look just to see, right, the careful reading that Rashi is doing here, upon which he's basing his broader, more central idea. Shine'emar, ve'achar nasu ha'am mechatzerot v'gomer. This reference brings us back to the end of Parshat Bahalotcha, right before Parshat Shlach, right, which significantly is the parasha of Chet HaMeraglim. And at the very end of Parshat Bahalotcha, it says, right, this is right after Miriam had Tzaraat and the people had to wait for her for 7 days, and it says Pasuk Tzayin, the last pasuk in Perek Yudbet, Ve'achar nasu ha'am mechatzerot vayachanu b'midbar Paran, right? They left Chatzerot, right, which is where the previous story had taken place. Vayachanu b'midbar Paran. They now encamped in Midbar Paran. And the very next pasuk is the beginning of the story of the Meraglim. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe l'amor, shlach lecha nashim vayaturu, etc. So the assumption is, right, that the location of the story of Chet HaMeraglim is Midbar Paran, right? Which, if you do a little research, Midbar Paran is apparently a broader area within which there are smaller places, right? So in other places, if the sending place of the Meraglim is called by other names such as Kadesh, right? That's because that is within the broader area of Midbar Paran. Then Rashi continues in our Rashi, in our pasuk. Vayachanu beritma. Right? In our pasuk, meaning further on in the list of the masa'ot in our parasha, right? In pasuk Yud Zayin Yud Chet, it says Vayachanu, right? These are names of places that we already know from Parashat Bahalotcha. And then in pasuk Yud Chet, Vayachanu beritma. Right, that they went left Chatzerot, and here it says that they arrived and they encamped in Ritma. right? I recall that in the end of Parashat Bahalotcha, right before the Chet HaMeraglim, the Sipur HaMeraglim, it says that Vayachanu b'midbar Paran. So Rashi says, Lamadata shehi midbar Paran, right? From this we learn that Ritma is midbar Paran, or perhaps you could say is in midbar Paran, right? Midbar Paran again be a broader area, and Ritma is within it, right? So in the end of Parshat Bahalotcha, it specifies the larger region, and here it mentions a specific place called Ritma. If you look at the Rashi on Pasuk Yud Chet, Vayachanu beRitma, and here Rashi is doing something very midrashic. In fact, he's quoting a midrash, as is often his way. Al Vayachanu beRitma, al Shem Lashon Hara Shel HaMeraglim, right? A classic midrashic question, right? If here it's called, if here it's called one thing and there it's called another thing. Then why? What, in other words, if generally we call this place Midbar Paran, why is this list calling it Ritma? Right. This is the type of question that you see all over the place in the Midrash. Al Shem Lashon Hara Shel HaMeraglim. So Rashi is quoting the Midrash here that it was called Ritma because of the Lashon Hara, the slander spoken by the Meraglim. Sheneemar Ma Yiten Lecha Uma Yosif Lecha Lashon Remiyah. Right? Rashi, again, quoting the Midrash, quotes a pasuk from Tehillim Kuf Kaf, and in that Mizmor Tehillim, the speaker is talking about those who speak Lashon Hara, who slander, who say wrong things, and are thereby harming him. And in one case, in the pasuk, the slander, the Lashon Hara, is referred to as Gachalei Ritamim, right? So here, when it's a place is called Ritma, right, in the context sorry, there the context of where the word Ritamim is of Lashon Hara, is of slander. So Rashi says here the place is called Ritma. Why? Because it was the sending, it was the place from which the Meraglim were sent, and they, of course, were guilty of speaking Lashon Hara against Eretz Israel. And this is the basis of Rashi's broader interpretation of Pasuk Aleph as to why the, which we learned earlier, why the Masa'ot are here, right? So, in other words, which was based on the idea that a certain number of Masa'ot until they sent the Meraglim. As an aside, it's an interesting study to look at how the different Mefarshim, including particularly in these obscure parts of the Torah, it's often interesting to look at the different Targumim, particularly Targum Yonatan, how they explain the names that are mentioned. Because very often there are interesting geographical, historical, midrashic allusions, which again are all these little hidden tidbits in these seemingly boring lists in the Torah. Back to Rashi's main goal in his commentary here, right? So we already saw the explanation he brought from Rabbi Moshe HaDarshan, right? That the purpose of the Masa'ot, or the purpose of the list of the Masa'ot, is to show the Chibah of Hashem, right? That Sach HaKol, they didn't have it so bad. They could have had a Yibdad if Hashem was, you know, out to get them. He could have made their lives really miserable for 38 years, but Sach HaKol, in the end, it really wasn't all that bad. But then Rashi continues. And he says, V'Rabbi Tanchuma Darash Bo Drashacher. Right, Rabbi Tanchuma, right, in Midrash Tanchuma, we find a different interpretation. Mashal leMelech shehaya beno chole, right, is a parable of a king whose son was sick. V'holicho lemakom rachok lirifuto, and the king, the father, brought his son to a distant place in order to heal him. Kevan shehayu chozrin, hitchil aviv moneh kol. Kol ha-masa'ot. Amar lo, kan yishnanu, kan hukarnu, kan chashashta et roshecha v'chule. Right, what is the story that's being told here? Right, the son is sick, the father, the king, brings him to a distant place to be healed. And when they finally get back home, right, after this journey, which they took in order to heal him, the father started to recount all of the places that they went to. Right, remember here, this is where we rested, and this is where we apparently the word means to cool down, right? Mefarshim explain that because often when a person is sick, presumably feverish, you try to cool them down. And here your head, you worried about your head. I don't know the best way to translate it, right? In other words, here you were not doing so well, right? Each step of the way, the father recounts to the son what had happened. The question is how to understand this second interpretation that Rashi brings, the interpretation of Rabbi Tanfuma. What is the story trying to tell us? So one possibility is to see that it's a similar interpretation to what Rashi brought in his first explanation, right, the explanation of Rabbi Moshe HaDarshan. And this is the way that the Gur Aryeh understands it, right? That what is the father doing on this trip? First of all, he's going to heal his son, but what is the recounting afterwards? It's a recounting, the Gur Aryeh says, of all of the different things that the father did for the son, right? The tremendous care that he provided, with which he provided the son on this journey. Right, and the Nimshal, of course, is obvious, right? The Gur Aryeh, quoting from the Gur Aryeh here. Kach Hashem Yitbarach haya metapel im Yisrael b'shvil ahavato alehem. U'b'shvil kach yizkeru Yisrael hatavot she'asa lehem v'yavdu oto b'chol lev. Right, that the recounting of each of the Masa'ot is meant to remind Bnei Yisrael of the kindnesses. Right? This is reminiscent of Rashi's first explanation, the kindnesses that Hashem did every step of the way, and the Gur Aryeh adds to this, and in this way, Bnei Yisrael would learn to recognize what Hashem did for them, and they would serve Hashem, they would worship Hashem with a full heart. So this sounds, like we said, to be very similar to the first idea, right? That the listing of the Masa'ot is meant to show the kindnesses of Hashem. The question then is, of course, well, why bring the second interpretation, right? So if you think about the second interpretation as compared to the first one, right, what the second interpretation adds is clear, right? While, and Mefarshim point this out, this is not, I'm not first to say this. The first one explains why we would be told, there were this number of Masa'ot before they got to the Meraglim, this number after the Meraglim. Right? The recounting of the name of each place would be unnecessary according to the first interpretation. The second interpretation, right, which has the father telling the son what happened in each place, recounting for the son what happened to each place, that would require actually remembering each and every place that they went to, right? So it would seem that perhaps the second interpretation fills in something that the first interpretation does not give, right? Whereas with the first one, it would be enough simply to say that Hashem, didn't make us travel around too many times. We don't have to have an entire list of every single place by name where they went. The second explanation, right, requires that list, and in that way, it fills in our understanding of why we need this list a little bit better. Of course, there's also the difference that simply it could be that Rashi is bringing two different interpretations that essentially say the same thing. Both of these are meant to say, again, that the purpose of the list is to show Hashem's kindness. But Hashem's kindness is shown in two different ways according to each of the interpretations. According to Rabbi Moshe HaDarshan, it was Hashem's kindness expresses itself in that he didn't give us the runaround, making us wander endlessly during those 38 years. Whereas according to Rabbi Tanchuma, the kindness of Hashem was more in the specific thing that happened in each and every place, right? Each place that Bnei Israel went to, Hashem took care of them, right? So the purpose is the same, right? To show Hashem's kindness, whereas the way in which Hashem's kindnesses show themselves is different according to each of the interpretations. So perhaps that is the difference between the two different explanations that Rashi brings. there's one other possible way to understand this, and that becomes a little bit more apparent, perhaps, if you look at the source that Rashi brings his second interpretation from, right? And that again is from the Tanhuma. The original Midrash in the Tanhuma, as we've often seen when Rashi quotes from the Midrash, is slightly different than how Rashi quotes it. And he said there it says the following: Mashal leMelech Shehayah beNochle, holichu leMakom Acher leRefuto. Kevan Shehayah Chozrim, Itchil Aviv Moneh et haMasaot. Kan Nishnanu, Kan Ukarnu, Kan Chashash Tavoshecha. Right? So far that's exactly what Rashi quotes. However, there Rashi's quote ends, and the Midrash continues. Now, to be fair, at least according to the Rashi that I have in front of me, it says v'chule, meaning go and see the rest of the Midrash. And the rest of the Midrash says the following: Kach amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu leMoshe, mina lahem et kol hamikomot heichan hichisuni. Lekach ne'emar eile masei. Right? What is the Nimshal according to the original Midrash? That Hashem says to Moshe, list for them all of the places that they angered me, right? And that is what's going on in the list of Eila Maaseh, right? So this gives a slightly di this original Midrash sheds a different light, right? If according to our original understanding, the purpose of the list was to show God's kindnesses to us, then you could say that here the purpose of the list seems to be in order to show B'nai Israel, you did this wrong, you did that wrong, you did this wrong. Right? The tone is a little bit different. So there are two possible, or maybe even three possible ways of understanding that. One possibility is that, yes, right, that the Midrash and Rashi are giving a different explanation here, right? And Rashi himself says, right, that Rabbi Tanhuma brings a different interpretation, right? Very different, not only in its details, but also in its message, right? That the list was in order to remind B'nai Israel, right? You did this wrong, you did that wrong, don't do it again, right? It's a reminder of things that, lessons that need to be learned, right? Perhaps you could say it that way. And therefore, if according to Rabbi Moshe HaDarshan, the purpose was to show God's kindnesses, here it was, the purpose was to remind B'nai Israel of what they had done wrong in the past. Okay, that's one possible way of understanding what we now see as the meaning of the Midrash. A different possibility is that no, you can still understand the Midrash in the same way that we originally understood it, right? Show them the list of all the places where they angered me, and nevertheless, here I did this for you, and here I did that for you, and here I did this for you, right? Despite the fact that every step along the way, B'nai Israel were doing things wrong, and they were over and over again angering or potentially angering Hashem, nevertheless, Hashem provided for them, Hashem took care of them, etc. Right? So you could say that the part of the Midrash which Rashi doesn't quote, which perhaps with his Vechule he's telling us to look at on our own, just emphasizes Hashem's kindnesses. Right? They angered me, and nevertheless, right, I was still kind to them. And that's the second way that you could understand the differences. The third possibility is that, in our context of trying to understand Rashi, that this part of the Midrash is not relevant. Right? Perhaps when Rashi quotes the Midrash and doesn't quote everything, perhaps he's intentionally leaving that part out. Right? We see this in Rashi other places where he takes a general idea. Right? You could still take the mashal of the king and the son, and the king was trying to help heal the son. Without the part about the anger, by right? Taking the image of the caring father, without the part about listing all the places that B'nai Israel angered him. Right? It's possible that Rashi is very careful in this case, in how he quotes the Midrash. Whether or not this last reading that I've suggested is legitimate or not would probably depend on whether or not the original Rashi had the word v'chule. Right? Sometimes in different manuscripts of Rashi, things such as that were added in, right? So we'd have to go back and do a little research and see what did Rashi originally write. Did he put that v'chule in or not? And then we could decide how, what to include in his quoting of the Midrash and what not to include. In all cases, regardless of these different ways that you could possibly look at it, the general message of the Midrash Tanhuma, which Rashi quotes, is clear, right? That what do these Masa'ot teach us, right? That Bnei Israel did many things wrong in the desert, right? Or you could even say, right, that the whole reason that they were wandering in the desert for all those many years was because they were cholim. There was something wrong with them that had to be cured, and every step along the way was a step closer to their being, quote, cured, right? Getting step by step closer to that which the state which they were meant to be in, right? And it was Hashem every step of the way. Rashi is saying, by quoting this midrash, that helped Bnei Israel reach that point that they needed to reach in order to be able to finally, at the end of the 40 years, enter Eretz Israel. So there you have it, right? Within this Rashi, right, we see a little bit of a taste of Rashi's trying to understand this list, right, which again seems to be a rather tiresome list at times, right, like other lists in the Torah, giving it meaning, trying to help us understand why the Torah would include it. And also, it gives us a taste of a little tidbit, right? How, if you read these lists carefully, right, interesting little things can be found, right? Perhaps this will encourage you to do some more comparisons of other parts of the list, compare it to the original story in the earlier parts of the Torah, and to find other interesting tidbits with the Rashi's help or without Rashi's help, in the next couple of days. Wishing you all Shabbat Shalom.